the podcast from Belmont Chapel in Exeter, sharing the story, living the life. For more information, go to belmontchapel.org.uk.
It's a really strange day in many ways for me. It's a wonderful day, but I have to confess to you, it is also a strange day to come back here after 34 years since I left and to have memories rekindled. And when you get ancient like me, to kind of be in a situation like this is really very strange in so many ways. To see pictures of my Uncle Stan Cockrum, who I always remember as a man of grace and generosity and time-giving. And if you didn't realize, and she'll kill me for saying this, Uncle Stan's daughter is sat right there in the congregation. Our cousin Ruth is here tonight and was here this morning. And just to see him and my dear father-in-law, Fred, as he was known, church treasurer, elder, and everything else around here. Belmont, I think my wife will correct me if I'm wrong, gave the name. I think he was responsible. Will you nod vertically, love, if I'm right? That's great. So that was the name that came, Beautiful Mountain. And here we are on this day, and it's rekindled for me so many things that I was part of here, trying to be an elder, the youth leader, and a teacher at Exeter School, and trying to keep that juggling balls in the air was quite something to do, really. But this place for me was so formative. So many things and people that I met and worked with here. Some of the elders that I could mention all their names, but it probably wouldn't be helpful. Guys who got alongside me as a young hothead, as a radical. One of them particularly I will mention, Rolf Anier, who bless him, would often sort of put his loving arm around me and say, "Dave, don't be a hothead." Which was just a lovely way of saying to me, "Dave, calm down. You can't change the whole of Belmont in one evening." And as we sat in elders' meetings with some of those men, it's just been something that's rekindled how precious and formative, and to hear the Bible taught faithfully. And I want to say to you before I do anything else, if I say it in a worldly sense, you don't know how lucky you are. And then I'll put it in the Christian way. You don't know how blessed you are. Because I do a lot of work around the country, training youth leaders, going to churches and going to places and meeting up with guys who are trying to do good youth ministry. And what I've seen here today and you know, what you guys are up to, you lovely young Belmont with your fantastic T-shirts on, and all the work that's going on here, just be so thankful. And if this day achieves nothing else, I mean, if it's just reminiscence, can I say lovingly, it's a waste of time? Because that's wonderful, and to thank God, and to be, we'll get onto that in a minute. But just to sort of say, support these guys, love these guys, do anything you can to help them do the ministry that they're doing, and pray for them, and give anything you can, your time, your energy, your money, whatever, to make sure that young people hear the gospel and become faithful followers of Jesus Christ. And if nothing else comes out of that day, if it's a renewal of commitment on your part as members of this church to stick in there with these folks who turn up week in, week out and do the job. I know what that's like. I know what it means to be either a volunteer worker or a full-time worker in a church doing youth ministry. And I know how hard it can be. So my word to you, if I'm allowed to do this, I'm not sure I am. I didn't check with anybody before I said it. But Derek, am I okay? Where's Derek? Am I doing okay? Brilliant, thanks, mate. I was just checking with you, mate. But just do that. And so that this fabulous work that was so good and still is so good goes on, and many, many young people in this patch come to know Jesus. And that's what this is about tonight. It is about Jesus. It is about following him, about serving him, about loving him, about committing your life to him. And that's the joy of having been part of this fantastic place, which I look back on so fondly. So that's my initial opening, and I don't know what you say really on anniversaries. You know, what do you say to someone? I know what I say to my wife, darling. I love you. I think you're wonderful. And occasionally, about twice since we were married 47 years ago, she's had flowers. No, it's not quite that bad. Okay, it's not quite that bad. And it's, you can say I love you, and I can send you flowers or chocolates or something like that, but. I really agonized over this, about what to say And I wonder how you came tonight. I wonder what you came expecting. To rekindle fond memories, to meet up with old friends that you haven't seen, or to look to, just out of a kind of morbid curiosity about what people look like now, having compared to what they looked like 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago. And think, oh my goodness. Somebody said to me this morning, you haven't changed a bit. I love that brother. He's a wonderful brother. I think he's fantastic. So that's what he said to me. And I feel, as I say, very privileged to be part of this. And we could spend the whole time reminiscing, like the time I was at that Torbay Court house party with, I don't know if you noticed, Bernard was at one end of the picture and Margaret was at the opposite end. I'm sure they were speaking, but they were right at the opposite ends. And I can remember walking, I think it was that house party, and I'm not good at dates, so forgive me, and just listening to that man teach. And it rattled me. It really rattled me. This was the guy who'd been to church with mummy and daddy in a very liberal setting and was confronted by a man who would not shut up about Jesus. Just preached one night particularly. I think it was the Sunday night of the house party. And the place was just rock solid by what he said about Jesus. And if I've got a word to say to you guys, it is keep doing that. Tell them about him. Yes, understand the culture. That's important. But keep telling people about him, Jesus. Him crucified, risen from the dead. Talk about him. Because he it is that changes lives. It isn't structures and strategies, although they're important. It is him who changes. And I remember once we were... With Bernard, we were often late for things. It was just the way it was. It was great. It was just a wonderful... I was never early. Thank you, Paul. Just leave, would you, brother, at this point? Thank you very much. We were late for mackerel fishing at Tynmouth. Bernard used to take us mackerel fishing sometimes, and some of the guys used to love to get hold of the fish and grab them, and the fish would wobble. It was horrible. We were just going past Alfington Church on the left. Some of you know where I am. And we shot up that road where the buses used to go. And as we got to the top of the hill, a Devon General, double-decker, big one, all red, was coming the other way. Everybody in the bus went, like that. And we just about got through. But that was Bernard. And the inspiration of working with that man and his vision and what he tried to do, I cannot tell you. My first experience of Beaumont was actually in the old hall. I was in Brian Orford's Sunday school. Now, Brian was a great friend. Watching him lead a Sunday school was, to me, innovative, creative, fun. And he was amazing what he did. Years before, like Bernard, before his time. That's why I say you don't realize how blessed you've been. Have two guys like that in your presence. And Brian used to be my dentist, and I used to play hockey with Brian as well. And Brian used to love to put me in his dentist chair, fill my mouth with salt, so he couldn't say a word, and then utter some delightful statement like, I think teachers are grossly overpaid, you know. And you had no right to reply whatsoever. And so, you know, we could go on like that and remember. And I could keep going like that, and I could think of that little crowd that's back there somewhere who I had tea with tonight. Great tea. Thank you, Dawny, for doing all that, and Karen, and putting all that together. And I've still got your teddy bear that you gave me when I left here. And those fabulous people that we used to do, we were talking over tea time about the walks and the weekends and the crazy things we used to do at Gidley, house parties and Prince Hall and all those places. And we could go on like that, couldn't we? And I value those so much, and it was great to see you guys all at tea time. So we celebrate, certainly, 75 years of fruitful ministry. It's worth celebrating, and we can be thankful. As all of you have come here tonight, and I've met one or two of you who I remember from days of yore, who are so grateful that you were part of this, because God brought you here at the right time. So be thankful. Remember certainly all the experiences you've had, all those wonderful things that you experienced when you were here, the way you were taught, the way you were cared for. We heard Sandy just say about Karen, and people who took time to be with you and to share the good news of Jesus with you, and be grateful for all that. But I want to just, if I may, just for a minute or two, to say I want you to remember something else, which is far more important than anything else I've mentioned so far. It comes in the middle of that passage, verse 8 of chapter 2 of 2 Timothy. And Paul utters the extraordinary statement, remember Jesus Christ, raised from the dead, descended from David. This is my gospel, for which at this time Paul was suffering, even to the point of being chained like a criminal. Paul was in chains. He was in prison. He would love Timothy to visit him. He says it later in the letter. I have no one else like him, Paul says in Philippians 2. But the essence of his message to the young Timothy, the old apostle, who's been imprisoned, his last words, the last words that Paul wrote, as far as we know, in this letter. And the essence of the book is continue, press on, keep going, don't give up. There's more to do. We haven't finished yet. Press on. Now, when you get to 70, like I am, it's very easy to say, and I want to say this to some of the elderly brethren and sisters here tonight, it's very easy to say, we've done our bit. No, you haven't. No, you haven't. Press on. Don't give up. The gospel is still real. Jesus is still real. Press on until the day comes, as it did for Bernard, prematurely, 40 plus years. I know because I carried his coffin up that church. I remember it, thinking, why at 40 does a man with that kind of vision? And all in the providence of God, I've learned how to process that issue and what that meant. But remember, Paul says, Jesus Christ. Remember him. Earlier in the book, he's talked about the good deposit of God's truth that must be guarded and passed on. It's in this chapter as well. And that's what we celebrate tonight, the good deposit, the word of God, which is what people need to hear in this generation. Yes, of course they need us to understand them, the culture they deal with, and the cultural mores that exist within our society. Of course we need to understand that. But in order to deal with this society, with this world, with its insurgencies and its ISIL and beheadings and people who fly aeroplanes into towers and all this kind of stuff, the only way you'll deal with that is to understand Jesus. That's it. Because he is the same yesterday, today, and forever. He will never change. That will never change. Because Jesus is here tonight by his Spirit. And whatever's happening here with what's going on in young Belmont today is because God's Spirit is at work to bring life into people who before didn't know him. So it's a timely reminder, I think, to us in this verse to say, remember Jesus Christ in the busyness of life. It's so easy to forget him, isn't it? Life makes demands on us. He gets squeezed out, but he is the person at the heart of this ministry, Jesus Christ. If you don't know who he is, he's the man who is the Messiah, who rose from the dead. He is the God in a body person, who came out of a tomb, whose resurrection is the direction marker. I am the way, the truth, and the life, who points to life in all its eternity. He is the one who we point people to when eternity is the dimension that people, I believe, in this society and the contacts I have nowadays in ministry need to hear about. They need to hear that there is something beyond the pressures and the world that we're faced with on our news bulletins every day. There is an eternal dimension, and that's the one and only unique historical Jesus. He's real. He loves you. He cares for you. And Paul admits it will not be easy. He talks of the life of a soldier who will endure hardship. I have no idea where many of you have been since I knew you here at Belmont. But I would be pretty clear that most of you have endured hardship of some form or another, bereavement, tragedy, pain. But he adds that the soldier is single-minded. He doesn't get involved in civilian affairs. He wants to please his commanding officer. And friends, if I can say that to you, that should be, whatever else we're involved with our professional lives, our family lives, our recreational lives, and all those things are valid and good. the thing that we need to see is just like the soldier, and Paul talks about him here, doesn't get involved in civilian affairs in verse 4, if you want to follow me, rather tries to please his commanding officer. And I find that a huge challenge, that statement. Do I do everything to please my commanding officer? That's Jesus. Am I focused in that way? Am I trying to do that, whatever I may be doing? Whether I'm playing sport, playing golf, which I do badly, by the way, so don't get any ideas. All the things that I do, am I trying to please my commanding officer? And then the next two images add to that picture of the Christian life. The athlete, it's not about winning, this context here, not at all. The athlete does not receive the victor's crown, except, he says, by competing according to the rules. Now, Christians have got a bad press about rules, haven't they? I think, oh, Christianity is all rules. It's just as don't do this, don't do this, do this, do this. And it's all about rules. That's what you've got to do, and then you'll be all right, and then you'll keep God happy. Because God will get grumpy with you if you don't obey all his rules. I spend some of my life, winter days usually, at Twickenham, which is HQ for rugby, if you didn't know. And I watch guys knocking 7 bells out of each other on rugby pitches. It's great entertainment. But there are rules there. Why are there rules there? They hit each other very hard, but there are certain ways that they can't hit each other. If they do, they get sent off. Why? Because there are rules there to protect them, to stop them getting hurt any more than they do get hurt. And rules, therefore, are caring for those people that partake in that activity. The 70-mile-an-hour limit, which I always obey implicitly. Who laughed? Out. It's there for our good, isn't it? It's there for our care. God's rules come from God's heart of love. So when it says here, compete according to the rules, that is God saying, I've put those things in place because I love you, I want the best for you, those commandments are there because I love you, and you're going to thrive and prosper if you compete according to the rules that I've given you. I love you. Don't be daft and break them. And if you have, of course, there is a gracious God who can forgive. And the farmer thing is all about hard work. So the images there are there for our love, and they express God's love. And I guess that's what you teach your young people here, to compete according to the rules. So following Christ here is about obedience, hard work, and that's obedience. Well, if it's obedience, there's someone to obey. And we're back to the person of Jesus. Can I say a word to perhaps some of you who've been through this fabulous work here, and maybe it's not been a great walk with Jesus over the years. It's been hard. And if you're honest, you've lost the plot. Can I say that from tonight, can I encourage you, and I'm going to say no more than this, to take a look back at what Jesus meant to you when you were here. And maybe just sort of say, well, I'm an honest person. I'm open to ideas and thinking about worldview and what it means to live on this planet. And some of you here are dear friends who I know well. Just take a look at Jesus. Don't look at me. Don't look at the leaders that you were with, because they may bias your judgment. But read a gospel. Remember Jesus Christ. Now, that's not remember in the sense of not forgetting. That is take your mind back to him. Give Jesus a chance. Remember him. Focus on him. Think about him. Try and understand him. Think about what he meant to you. Think about what he did. Why did he do it for you? Remember Jesus Christ and maybe turn back to living. And it helps us to understand, because he then goes on in this little bit at the end of the chapter to come out with this sort of little hymn thing that is, here is a trustworthy saying, verse 11. If we died with him, we shall live with him. If we endure, we will also reign with him. Now, let's deal with the first two first. Those are very profound, aren't they? If we died with him. Now, literally in the first century, of course, to be a Christian could mean that. I've been to the Colosseum in Rome. And when you go into the Colosseum, I shall always remember the thing. My wife was into Roman remains. That's why she loves me, I guess. And we walked in there, and we were looking at Roman remains. I just remember going into the Colosseum, and right at the bottom there is a big wooden cross, a bit bigger than that one. And that commemorates, quite simply, the men, who, and probably the women as well, who died in that arena for their faith. It was literal. But what does he mean here? He doesn't mean that necessarily, literal death, although it was in the first century very common, and still is today in different parts of the world, isn't it? Pakistan, Nigeria, places like that. If we died with him, we will also live with him. Now, what Paul is talking about here, and wouldn't this be wonderful if this happened at this service, as we celebrate 75 years of Belmont's youth ministry. If people here tonight said, look, I want to die to self. I don't want that to be the focus of my life. I want to shift from being a person who's self-centered to being a person who's God-centered. I want to die to self. If we die with him, Paul says, we shall live with him. We will be raised with him and live with him in eternity. And what the gospel is, and what you guys, I'm sure, tell young people, is just that. That we die to self. We shove self behind us. Self put behind us. For the future take us. Lord of the years, be pleased to hear our prayer. And my prayer tonight is that perhaps those of you that have shifted the centrality of your life from what it means to be you at the center, I would just urge you to think about what it means to have Jesus at the center. Because when I heard that message of Bernard's in Torbay Court, I told you it rattled me, and that's the reason it rattled me. Because this bright math student who knew it all had to suddenly admit, no, I'm not the master of my own destiny, and God never intended me to be. There's another dimension here. Bow the knee. And if we don't do that, well, the consequences are very clear, aren't they? If he will disown us. But notice one thing as we close. The last phrase of that passage. If we are faithless, he remains faithful. Now, today has been about that, hasn't it? It has been for me, as I've heard about what you're doing, what I was doing, what they were doing in 1896, what Uncle Sam was doing, running people up and down at a picnic and all that kind of stuff. That tells me, and John's stuff that he did with all those different generations and those crazy concerts that he did and all these things that were there and there and there and there and there, are saying that God has always been at work here. And he remains faithful. If we go faithless, he remains faithful. Let me tell you tonight that there is a faithful God whose arms are open wide. Do you know the prodigal? Let me be a little licensed here, maybe. I think the prodigal son's father spent every day peeping out behind the curtain. Is he coming? Not today. Is he coming? No, not today. And then one day, he pops the curtain back. It isn't. Is it? No! My son has come home. The faithless son had come back to the faithful father. And what today has emphasized for me in just a wonderful and beautiful way, as I've shared this day with you, is that we have a faithful Father who will never leave us, never forsake us, never reject us, but is constantly running down that drive with open arms saying, son, it's great to have you back. Welcome home. Let's have a party. That, I think, is what today's about. And as you guys go on doing your ministry, doing your work, you young people who are here tonight, who are part of it, and all those that aren't here, just to see that constant ongoing work of Christ going on as the gospel is preached and young people are cared for, and young people are talked to, and their questions are answered, and all those things that make up good youth ministry. Please, God, you keep on doing it. You remain faithful to the gospel that God has entrusted you with, the good deposit. Keep on doing it. And may God bless you. And maybe I'll come back on your 100th. No, that would be tricky, that one. I'll let you know. And we'll see so many more that God has blessed. May I pray for you and with you? That would be lovely. Just bow our heads and let's pray together. Father, I thank you personally for the joy that this day has been, for the pleasure of meeting old friends, for the joy of renewing fellowship with guys that I did ministry with many years ago. I thank you for every single one of them. I thank you for the memory of Bernard and for Brian, so formative in my life, and many other men and women who I serve with here. I thank you for every single one of that. But I pray, Lord, that you will continue to work your business in this place. As those who think and consider their future and what they do and how they do it, that you will guide, you will envision, you will equip, you will train. And we will see much blessing coming out of young Belmont right here. Young people equipped and committed to Christ to serve him for the rest of their days. And we will remember at the end to give you all the glory. We thank you in Jesus' name.